Rape, abortion, lesbianism, child care, equal pay, and women's culture are some of the issues discussed on Radio Free Women, a weekly feminist show produced by and for women. Radio Free Women is aired at 2:45 p.m. on Mondays and 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays here on WGTV 90.1 FM in Washington.
Dig that. And that will be hopefully passed by City Council, and then any changes in you guys' legal aspects will go to Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think came out of the hearings? Well, first of all, what came out of the report, and then was it watered down, or what happened during the hearing interim?
Okay, the report itself had to be watered down due to the nature of the people on the committee. We were lucky in that there were five women and only one male, which helped to make it a lot more of a
woman-oriented
and even more of a radical woman kind of thing. Some of the recommendations that were watered down were prior sexual experience of the victim and when that's relevant in court. And the husband-wife exclusion of the law, which states that a husband can rape his wife with impunity. That's not considered rape among married people. These, you know, recommendations, we want to make further changes towards. Unfortunately, because of the further testimony that was given at the hearing, it may add to narrowing down even more and watering down even more the report itself. Some of the testimony that was given was very good. A lot of it by radical feminists. They had a very good perspective. There were also a lot of testimony given by professional people, establishment people, that
abortion, lesbianism, child care, equal pay, and women's culture are some of the issues discussed on Radio Free Women, a weekly feminist show produced by and for women. Radio Free Women is aired at 2:45 p.m. on Mondays and 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays here on WGTB 90.1 FM in Washington.
Line.
Phone service staffed by women for women who have been raped or attacked in the D.C. area. They provide legal, medical, and psychological referrals, as well as classes and information on self-defense. The Rape Crisis Center is also an educational group and is available for speaking requests. If you have been raped or attacked, or if you're interested in working with the center, call 333-RAPE.
Oh, yeah.
program where I can hear women's music or find out about services and events for women.
Haven't you heard about Sophie's Parlor?
Sophie's Parlor is a show for women that features women's music, announcements of local women's activities, local and national women's news, and informs women of services such as the Women's Center and the Rape Crisis Center.
On Saturday and Monday afternoons at noon and Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. on WGTB FM 90.1 in Washington.
Sail on home to Jesus, won't you, good girls and boys?
You're in just as much of a dangerous situation if you're forced to sodomize someone or be sodomized, as if you were forced to have intercourse.
Mm-hmm. Is that all about the legal?
But was there anything else specific that was a main issue?
Well. Along with the relevance of prior sexual experience of the victim, also with the relevance of prior history of a famous criminal. For instance, if a man, like as it stands now, a man can be taken to court on, you know, 8 different charges of rape, all with the same modus operandi, that all lead to, let's say, a consent offense, and the jury acquits him. And none of those previous attacks can ever be put into the record and, you know, put in as evidence in the trial coming up. And that's a very sorry point, because there's so many, you know, the rate of recidivism among rapes is so tremendous, and there are countless number of men that have gotten off after having raped, you know, 8, 10, 15, 20 women.
Is that something throughout the whole legal system, or is that just with a case of rape?
No, it's throughout the whole legal system. It's designed that way because they feel that that kind of evidence presented to the jury would prejudice the jury against the assailant. And I think that's, you know, one change that's got to be made legally within the system, especially if you're going to allow any kind of prior sexual history of the victim. I think you're going to have to allow that kind of history from the rape.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's entirely true, though, because there was testimony from lawyers that in the case of homicide, for example, Mary Helen Mountner? I shouldn't name a name, but a lawyer testified that in the case of a woman who has 4 children, if 3 of them have died of rat poisoning at various times, and then the 4th dies of rat poisoning, it can be used as circumstantial evidence that it's very unusual that 4 children of the same woman would die the same way, and that, you know, it's a possibility that she's murdered them. And this isn't true in the case of rape. If there's a similar situation where 5 women have made a complaint against a particular man and identified him, and the women are unknown to each other, and the operation of the rapist, of the whole way that it was carried out was the same in all cases, it still isn't admissible in court in the case of rape.
That would be a definite contradiction as far as the legal system goes, and for what that's worth, and the whole thing is really weird. Okay. would you like to get into the working within the reformist lines? Because I know that the object, of course, is to deter rape or, you know, stop it completely. How far do you think you get working within rape hearings or rape task force? Actually, we should probably save this till last. We're really wasting a lot of tape. Save that till last. All right, let's save it till last. Why don't we go into co-optation as far as you felt that Yaldell...
Okay, we've had problems in that, like testimony that was given by Yaldell of the Department of Human Resources, basically duplicated the services of the Rape Crisis Center, only from a very professional standpoint.
And his proposal.
Right, in his proposal, he wants to have a 24-hour emergency phone service for rape victims. He wants DC General to be established as a specific basically a rape clinic. But it's all coming from this professional standpoint. He wants GS 9s and 11s to be the counselors.
Social workers.
He never states whether they're to be male or female or whether that even makes a difference as far as he's concerned. Also, just the whole thing of establishing DC General is a thing that I don't think will get very much support even from city council, because it's not centrally located enough, and women should have, you know, much greater choice. In our proposal that we gave to the Rape Crisis Center, we're hoping that George Washington Hospital and Washington Hospital Center and DC General, all three, will be used as rape clinics.
Well, I know that in the beginning, a year ago when the Rape Crisis Center started, that was one of the worst things, that only DC General would take rape victims, and now he wants to go back to the same situation. It took a long time to get hospitals to accept them in the beginning.
Well, one problem is that, one reason for that is that DC General was the only hospital that took the treated rape victims at no charge, and we were also, you know, in disagreement with the fact that most of the treatment, and usually all the treatment that a victim gets, is not treatment for medical, you know, medical treatment for any kind of a physical problem or injury. It's forensic evidence. It's taking forensic evidence, which is gathering physical evidence to be used in court. And in other criminal cases, you know, the victim isn't required to pay for the collecting of evidence at all, and it's totally inconsistent with that. There's no reason why the victim should be charged for that, but that's been the case in rape, and the exception is DC General. And a year or so ago, there were a lot of problems with DC General, which some of it have been cleared up, but basically that the woman, the victim, would have to wait for hours and hours, you know, 6-8 hours sometimes after the rape to receive treatment, and generally the conditions weren't as good as in a lot of other hospitals. But women were forced for economic reasons to go to DC General.
Well, getting back to this being Yeldell's proposal, do you think that it's a politician's tactic rather than a real political proposal?
For sure. I think it's much more of a tactic. I don't trust where Yeldell's coming from at all. I think it would be interesting, you know, to note, though, that like our main hope is that there are two women involved in the Public Safety Committee who were involved in the hearing, and they became very politicized over the 3-day period.
These women on the council, the sub council,
right? And at the first day of the hearing, they were sort of had no real feelings about rape other than the usual myth that you have, you know, that somehow the victim is responsible, or that it's more of a sexual act than an act of power. By the second day of the hearing, one of the council women in particular was saying that she had to indignantly speak out as a woman that, you know, she saw rape as, you know, an act of power, that she couldn't understand some of the testimony and why it was relating it to guilt on the part of the women, on the part of the victim. And you were present for that?
She seemed to been really affected a whole lot by the testimony. A lot of people present were. It's a shame that it didn't get more media exposure, because it was a really educational experience for people who have never dealt with rape very much before. And hopefully the testimony will force people to deal with it, but that's the most important thing, that professionals are not, well, we found from our experience in the center, that professional counselors are not necessary for the average victim. That very few victims who have called us have needed professional counseling, and a person who understands the experience and knows what the woman's going through, to just be able to talk, for her to talk to someone who understands is the thing that she needs the most. And so we definitely don't feel that it's necessary to have professionals. We would rather see salaries be paid to people from the community to do this kind of work.
Well, seemed like it was extremely patronizing, and that in itself implies a whole lot of things, certainly not a deep understanding of the issue.
You mean, are you referring to Yeldell's proposal?
The quote.
Oh, the quote here. Yeah, definitely, and totally distorted, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not the way we see this society at all. Another thing about the hearings in general was that a lot of the testimony was presented in a patronizing way. A lot of what I saw over the 3 days that I spent at the hearings was very patronizing and demeaning to the women who testified.
The response of members of the city council was in lots of ways not good and not supportive at all.
Could we have do you want to mention the assumption that it was an inner city crime among the rape hearings itself?
It was brought out in the hearings, unfortunately. A lot of the old myths, one more time, and these, unfortunately, were not even refuted. That people were giving later testimony were not given the time to give for the testimony on that. But it came out that rape was supposedly an inner city crime and not a suburban crime, that it was mainly black men and lower class men who raped, and not understanding all the class assumptions and the race assumptions and the sex assumptions that come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, I mean, the reason why black men and lower class men are convicted more often of rape is because they don't have the means to have a good defense attorney to get them off. Also, a woman who is raped by an upper class or middle class white male is going to feel very apprehensive about going to court, because it will probably come down to a consent defense and her name will be smeared all over the world.
Well, let's run into an overall picture from a feminist viewpoint of the rape hearings. Any dangers of being co-opted or used in, you know, for these straight politicians' purposes, or what we do indeed gain out of these, if it may only be a few friends on city council.
Very tenuous friends. Yeah, unfortunately, I think there are a lot of people who were taken in by the whole attitude of certain members of the city council and members of the Department of Human Resources, thinking, oh, it's so wonderful to be testifying in this courtroom and having people in the establishment agreeing with what you're saying, but they're only agreeing in part, and only agreeing to those parts of what you're saying that they know they can co-opt.
Mm-hmm.
And they can co-opt it very effectively, and it's a big problem. They're going to be out for votes, and if you're dealing with the issue of rape, you're certainly going to get a whole lot of votes from women. You're going to get a lot of votes on law and order and any number of other issues. And so, for them, it's a very good thing to co-opt.
But it's still really important for women to involve themselves in things like this, because this is where the power is, and these people do have control over your life and certain aspects of your life. And if we're going to create change, we're going to have to deal with the institutions that are controlling us on some level. I think it's important to figure out where and how to use those institutions in the best interest of women.
And it's where the whole thing of the value of reformism comes in, that reformism can be, a very good tactic on a short-term level. And that's why the Rape Crisis Center decided to have definite input in the hearings and in the task force report itself. Because, you gain a lot of credibility, first of all. And outside of that, you gain a lot of, more knowledge and expertise. But you also are making, some changes for victims that would be reporting rape now. And the whole thing about reformism, though, is that if you only see it as, your goal, then it will get you nowhere, because it will be co-opted eventually. I think that the only value in reformism is if you use it as a tactic with revolutionary goals in mind, and then it can be very effective.
like to go. Can I go back and add something about the when we're talking about racism and classism and the assumption of it being an inner city problem and all that? I don't know if that was real clear because we just left it real fast. And I don't know if you want to just restate it or something, but I was thinking like we could phrase it maybe that even though like obviously it's a rape has racist and classist implications, those implications come from the racism and the classism and the system that's dealing with the rape, and that rape itself is an experience of women and an experience in which, you know, a crime is committed by a man against a woman. And it's political in the sense that men as a class are attacking women as a class. The racial and class implications come in when the rape is reported and statistics are made, and when the police and the courts, which are white male controlled and racist and classist, are called in. And they're also sexist, and so like the woman who's raped is going to be hurt by the situation, and as Billy said, you know, a black man or a poor white man are going to be prosecuted because they don't have the power to avoid it, and particularly also in the case where a white woman is the victim, because the white woman is the property of the white man, and that's an offense against the white man. It's not particularly important to them that it's an offense against a woman.